Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it's week 6 in the NFL season, and we got a lot of audio to get to from the week that was in the NFL. Let's begin with our own New England Patriots. After that big win against the Buffalo Bills, I know Mego doesn't believe it's a trap game, but many out there were debating on, is this a trap game? Stephon Diggs is here to tell you. Well, here's a look into the mindset of the New England Patriots heading into this game against the New Orleans Saints.
I think it's super important that we flip the page, considering New Orleans Saints is a really good football team. I know the record might not show it, but they're very skillful up front and in the back end. And to be honest, it might be a bigger test than last week, just as far as like having success and being able to replicate that process, or you know, do it all over again, and you know, work equally as hard and attention to detail and focus. Because this opponent, I know their record doesn't say it, but that's a good football team, and they've been in one score games plenty of times, and I don't expect it to be no different. We got to go in there with the right mindset.
Mego, I know you are firmly in the camp. This is not a trap game. The team is not good enough for it to be a trap game, but you have to feel confident that the message from the head coach is getting down to the players and through the mouths of guys like Stephon Diggs, letting you know that they are not overlooking the New Orleans Saints by any means.
Yeah, and I think probably, I don't want to speak for Stephon Diggs, but he probably has the perspective, right, of being on other teams.
Sure.
And more so than, say, somebody like, I don't want to pick on anybody, but like the younger guys like Kyle Williams or, Will Campbell or somebody who's like, wow, we got something going. Steph Diggs has gone through an entire season and many seasons with other teams. So he has the perspective of, hey, I know what can happen if you let your guard down a little bit. I do think something that you spoke to before, Shime, is like so spot on, which is us in the media and the fans' perspective can really overlook the parity, especially early in the season. And guys I've talked to, especially vets in that locker room, I had a conversation with Garrett Bradbury, who was like, hey, man, like, you see these teams like the Packers very early on. Everybody's looking at the Packers going, everybody's watching the Packers going like, oh my goodness, like the Packers are going to roll. And then they get upset by the Browns. So
the Chargers losing to the Giants a couple weeks
and
ago.
And that's not to sit here and do the cliche of like any given Sunday. But I do think especially with a team like the Patriots, who's still figuring some things out, it's only week 6, it's the right mindset to have.
The good thing is that Steph Diggs is taking ownership of this team, and he just got here.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and my guess is
he is a leader on this team.
My guess is Mike empowered him. Mike encouraged him. Mike said, hey, be yourself. We want you to lead. Coaches, a lot of times, I think Belichick did that with Rodney a little bit. Hey, when he brought him in, he's like, hey, don't be afraid to be yourself and show your personality. I know you're new here, but I expect your leadership skills to shine, because that's partly why I brought you in. I think that was probably the message, something like that, with Steph Diggs.
Yeah, and it does seem like the team listens and follows. Like that, just that thing in the beginning of the game where he was in the middle of the circle pumping everybody up and giving the speech. You could tell, like, he had control of that situation. Like, they were all on the edge of their seat listening to him. And he's probably their most accomplished player, right? I mean, like, there's not really too many other players on that team that have done in the league the type of things that he's done. So it's important to have a guy like that, and the fact that he's taken that role seriously, I think, is huge so far for this team.
Yeah, Arcand, we missed that pump-up speech from from you this morning. Play for your brother. Play for your brother. Let's talk about the Patriots offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, because one of the things we've been very concerned with Drake May is the lack of continuity at offensive coordinator. It happened for Mac Jones, and things went poorly. We want Drake May to have continuity in the offense. Well, Josh McDaniels spoke this week about the idea of one day being a head coach again and coaching elsewhere, and well, here's what he said.
I love living in New England. It's the short of it. Look, I just try to focus on now, really enjoying coaching for Mike and the staff and the guys we have here in this organization. And I would be surprising if I moved my kids out of Westwood. So come hell or high water. I don't know if I'll be here or not, but that is what it is.
Do we feel confident that Josh McDaniels isn't dying to be a head coach again in the NFL?
I don't know how you could. I mean, the considering kind of how the last two times went. I mean, how many guys? Very rare do you get fired in the middle of the season. In his two head coaching stints, he got fired in the middle of the season, and then there was one job, high profile job that he took that he didn't even get on the plane to go. Actually go follow through on that job with the Colts. So. To me, as far as a head coach, I think his name is kind of mud. I'll be honest with you.
It's kind of like Spagnuolo for the Chiefs. It's like he's kind of in a comfy spot. He loves where he's at, and he can just be here now as long as he wants.
North Turner was that way. Just a
Wade
better
Phillips.
Wade Phillips, another good one. There's guys throughout history that have tried the head coaching gig, and it just didn't work out, and they're better suited for offensive coordinator. And, you know, I get a sense that Josh, with his kids, moving kids around, that people go, why don't you get into coaching, Ted? It's like, because you get fired every 3 years and you're always looking for jobs. My feeling is the way he talks about that, and I just see him as a guy that's tried it. He took his shot. He missed. So, and he gets paid probably more than any other offensive coordinator in the league.
Well, he's still getting paid by the Raiders.
Right. He's getting paid as a head coach.
So there you go.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
But that's also another aspect of it, right? Like, I think he's getting paid by the Raiders for 3 more years. And maybe by then with Drake May, it'll be a moot point and he can, you know, work with any offensive coordinator. But once that money runs out and he's not free anymore for the Patriots, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't that change the dynamic a little bit if he wanted to keep coaching? He would have to then, you know, be the coordinator here and negotiate a contract for that. Or, and I don't think this is going to happen, but stranger things have happened. Guys have gotten chances like this. Some other team reaches out on a Hail Mary and says, hey, we want you to be the head coach, Josh, in 2 years when his name isn't quite as bad. Let's say Drake May takes off here and McDaniels gets a lot of the credit for it. NFL teams are like goldfish. Their memory just erases every year.
Well, and on top of that,
forget these things.
On top of that, Arcand, he hasn't even explored the college market yet. Like,
right.
That there
it's
are
going really well for former Patriots coaches.
Well, I'm just saying there might be a relatively local spot opening up at some point in the near future. You never know. Like,
take that Patriots coordinator job right now with Drake May over anything.
No, I know right now, but as Arcand pointed out, when that Raiders money dries up and the Patriots really don't want to pay you all that much, maybe that becomes an option. So, like, it's something to consider. I don't think he's leaving anytime soon. I'm very comfortable with Drake May's continuity at offense.
Oh, so now you want Josh McDaniels for the long
term. No, I just want continuity. And like I said earlier.
So you could just have a warm body in there for 3 straight years.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I really respect and appreciate what he has done for Drake May off the field. Don't always agree with his play calls. That's all.
You're ridiculous.
No, I'm not. I think I'm very
absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I know you're going to say I'm ridiculous about this, too.
Okay.
Because all week on the morning show, we've talked about potential trade targets for the New England Patriots as we get closer to the deadline.
No, you've talked about one trade target.
This is Nagel's favorite subject.
You're right.
We have
talked
about trade
one.
Targets. You've talked about one trade target ad nauseum.
Yes, we have. And that guy's name is A.J. Brown. After a Thursday night loss to the New York Giants, back-to-back losses for your Philadelphia Eagles. There were reports that Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, and A.J. Brown had some meeting earlier in the week to talk about things. Well, after the game Thursday, A.J. Brown was asked about that, and here was his response.
What was behind that?
I don't recall a meeting.
Oh, okay. The meeting never happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Those guys said it did happen.
Oh, you didn't talk to them.
You weren't in the meeting?
I don't recall.
Or you don't want to talk.
I don't recall.
I love this. AJ Brown is like getting like cross examined there. I do not recall.
Yeah, I don't recall. I plead the fifth. Hey, this guy is very upset with the situation in Philadelphia. Now, I don't think that the Eagles will ever trade him because I think Howie Roseman is far too smart for that. But I'm just saying, if there was a guy who happened to be disgruntled that wanted out of a place and the team was willing to deal him, the New England Patriots should very much be interested.
Mm. It depends what, and this is
what's,
not a cop-out.
This,
yeah, it's always what the cost is going to be. I will say with that meeting conversation, though, I have run into this multiple times before with athletes in different sports, and Ted, you can probably talk to your own experience on the other side of this. Sometimes,
sick brag.
Sometimes one guy will be like, well, we had a meeting, and then you'll talk to another guy who was supposedly in the quote meeting, and he's like, that was not a meeting. Like, it wasn't a meeting. We didn't sit down in a room in,
it wasn't a,
in a conference room. It wasn't a meeting. And they, there's
it's like
these,
a passing by.
Exactly. Or three guys sitting in front of their lockers having a conversation, and somebody says, well, we met about it, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, players only meeting, and it turns into this whole thing that players always hate.
But, hey, Christian, I'm curious what your thoughts are. If the Eagles were willing to trade A.J. Brown, what do you think the ask would be from the Eagles' standpoint?
I think it would be at least a first, maybe a first and a second, something like that. And a rap sheet this morning said that Howie Roseman has never met a trade he wouldn't consider, and don't be surprised if he looks for some help on defense. A cornerback or an edge would make sense. They have some corners. They have some edges. They don't have a lot of that on this team.
Yeah, no thanks.
That wouldn't
what
say
are you
they
talking
have a
about?
Ton
they
of
have
depth
a,
here.
They have like 2.5 corners, maybe.
So no, I mean, but I'm saying they have players that other teams would want. Like, they don't have a lot of depth, but they do have players.
Yeah, they have a player
in those
who
positions
I would like. So, which is Christian Gonzalez. We don't even know if he's going to play.
So, well, Carlton Davis is another one. And A.J. Brown is a player who I would like. So, you know, I mean, that's
I'm not
that's
trading one of my
trade.
Players, though, on my already thin team for A.J. Brown. Mm-hmm. The whole point of going and getting A.J. Brown is that, like with DK Metcalf in the offseason, all I got to do is trade draft picks and pay him the money. Like, that's supposed to be the upside of it.
But
I don't want to
trade a mid-season trade, and they're looking for defensive help. Clearly, the Patriots can't part ways within their defense.
Is this
guys.
The whole Red Sox issue where, like, they really wanted Joe Ryan at the deadline, price is too high, come the offseason, the price is naturally just going to go down?
That's maybe so. You know, that's interesting. My guess is if you waited till the offseason, yes, the price would go down than doing it at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I still don't understand why, you know, Dallas Goedert gets 11 targets in a game and A.J. Brown only gets like 7. But, you know, I'm not the one running an offense, I guess.
Not today.
Nope, not
maybe
today.
Maybe one day.
Maybe you never know, Mego. Maybe one day. I'll get a visor and a whistle and anything could happen.
Andy's still working towards it. Poor Andy.
True.
Catching strays, not even in the building.
Too bad for him. Let's pivot out of the NFL for a moment into another football topic. The college game, because one of the big talking points this week has been none other than Bill Belichick. The UNC debacle has been, you could not have written this any better. Let's hear from Keyshawn Johnson, who talked about the monumental F-up of Bill Belichick and UNC.
Bill Belichick didn't talk to Nick Saban before he took this UNC job, and Nick didn't tell him, as his good friend, successful college coach, didn't tell him that this was getting ready to be crazy in college. It was going to be different. Didn't let him know. So now, if it's true, Bill Belichick is talking to officials at UNC about a buyout. You halfway through the season and you want a buyout already? I know this has to be a false report. Can't be real. Because that just doesn't go with Bill Belichick, the Bill Belichick that I know. That just doesn't coincide. It doesn't make sense. Makes zero sense at all. But if true, man, what a monumental f-up UNC has put themselves in. You had Mac Brown right there. You had him right there. But you chose a better Mac Brown. So much for that. Good luck.
Ted, I will softball toss this one right up to you, my friend. Will Bill Belichick finish the season as the UNC head coach?
I have a hard time believing that. There's 7 more games, and the drama that we've already seen unfold just for the first 5 games has been unlike anything I've ever seen. It just more and more reports come out. There's something different every single day. The university is embarrassed. The faculty members there hated the process of how he was kind of hired in the first place, and now Bill has no cover. Your college football, that's a whole different world than the NFL game. You know, Bill was kind of insulated when he was the head coach of the Patriots and still in the NFL because a lot of reporters, a lot of people covering the game don't want to, you know, knives don't come out with Bill because of what he was able to accomplish in the NFL. Down there, It's totally different. I just, there's so much heat around that organization. I don't know how, if you're University of North Carolina, you feel comfortable having recruits come in and telling them, hey, we're building something great here with Bill Belichick, when it's been a dumpster fire. How do you convince getting anybody to go there? And even though they are ranked high in the the recruiting scales, it's all because of the volume of players they're bringing in,
and
not
the
quality.
Yeah, I look at it and I go, what's from making those guys changing their minds? Like, the more drama they see happen, the longer you let this go on, the longer you risk those recruits being like, I don't want to play for this senile old man. I'm out.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think for them, it's better to cut bait. It's getting more and more embarrassing, and that's a prideful university with high academic standards, and he's kind of bringing the whole university down.
The latest from Russini about how he thinks the bad headlines are coming from New England. I read that, and I was just
coming
like,
from New England?
Yeah, it's
yeah,
just
that they were coming out of New England.
Christian, real quick, did you read it wasn't the Patriots, it was New England. Do you think that means more than just from the Patriots organization?
Oh, yeah, the entire Patriots beat, I think, are all getting together deciding we're going to write mean things about Bill Belichick.
There are so many people in this city that want to defend him to the moon and back.
But all these articles, it's like they have 20 unnamed sources within the program. It's like, no, it's coming from...
We had a guy on our show this week from a news station in North Carolina. No. Like, this isn't...
brag.
Yeah, sick brag. Thank you. Yeah. Shout out to Pat Welter for joining our show from WRAL.
He was good too.
It's just... this isn't just made up baloney from New England.
He's delusional. He's grabbing at straws. And I love that they're looking for the leak. Like, as if there's one person. They're looking for that one leak that is
as Vrabel
out
pointed
there.
Out, trying to get the rats out of the building.
Oh, gosh. It's unreal, man.
It's pretty bad. It's a pretty bad situation. And Ted's clearly here for it.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Tommy Kern. Earlier this week, talking with the Midday Show, Jones and Keefe. He was also on WEEI Afternoons. He did reiterate that he's saying, in a vacuum, the Patriots could be a 10-win team by the time they get to their bye week. I said last week, my main point was that if the Patriots win this game against Buffalo, they should be a playoff team. And that, you know, looking at it, I said 9 wins at that point, throwing in an extra loss on top of the Tampa one. But really, if you're a team that can beat Buffalo in Buffalo in primetime and a defense that can limit Josh Allen like that, then those are the terms you can start thinking in. Is it crazy, Ted Scheim and Mego, to think that this could be a 9-10 win team by the time we get to the bye week?
No, I don't think at all. I think when you look at the schedule, it makes it very, very plausible. And then, to your point, Arcand, after beating Buffalo, they became -200 favorites to be in the playoffs, according to the sports books. And they're the people that set the odds into this for a living. Like, they know what they're doing. So I think it is very reasonable to expect them to now be a playoff team. And when you're looking at the bye week, to have, you know, 9-10 wins, I think that's totally fair.
For me, the only cautionary feelings that I have go back to the Steelers game.
Sure.
And it's very tough to win a game when you turn the ball over 5 times. I just think that we have these back-to-back great wins where you've mostly shown yourself to be a team that's a much higher caliber than that Steelers team, which is who I thought you were going into that Steelers game compared to that team. But I just wonder if they've totally washed their hands of some of that dumb football. I don't think that they have. And if they truly can, like, in the game, turn the page and say, that was a dumb mistake and we're getting over it and we're not going to have these turnovers be contagious, among our offensive players. I just got to see a little bit more of that to believe like this is a 10-win team.
I agree. Totally agree. And, you know, look, you look at the schedule and you go, I think the Patriots have the softest schedule moving
forward. It's not even close, especially with the injuries to Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson.
The teams combined have a winning percentage of, like, I don't know, 0.310 or something. And so it's not a very good schedule. So that should benefit them. But to Mago's point, I need to see more consistent, clean football being played before I would go there, and so that's that to me. But there's going to be a lot of people. We're about to have Tom Curran on, who will say, based on what we saw against in really the last 2 weeks, you put down a Carolina team pretty good. You brought the hammer down, and then you beat what was considered the best team in the NFL last week against the Bills. The expectations should be that this is a playoff team. Based on the last 2 weeks, but I'm still worried that they still have some of that bad football left in them. That's what worries me.
And I will say, as we await the injury report here, who's going to be inactive, is that
depth
is a serious question where we see. Sure. Dan Roach of WBZ just had a video up of Christian Gonzalez testing that hamstring out. And he's moving around pretty good, but he's still testing it out before the game, which would suggest that they're on the fence there. And then Milton Williams now has some kind of illness. If he's barfing, get him some Zofran. Like, we got to get like something for our guy, because
Zofran.
I need the milkman in the game.
What's
please.
That? What is it? What,
You've
what?
Never had that?
No.
It stops you from throwing up.
It's like Zofran. Opposite of what is
it? I've never
heard
of that.
You've never heard of that? Yeah.
No.
So if you ever have like a food poisoning and it's very bad and you know what the cause of it is, go get a prescription for that.
It will
Call
stop
up your
food poisoning?
It'll stop you
from throwing up?
Yeah. This is probably great if anyone's having a fine brunch right now. It doesn't do anything for the other.
Gotcha.
You have Imodium for that, though.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
As much as I hate to break up this conversation, let's go and welcome in our guest from NBC Sports Boston. You can hear him on pre, post, and on the halftime show as well. I'm talking, of course, about Tom E. Curran, who joins us here on Football Sunday. Mr. Curran, how are we doing?
Mr. Kent, how are you?
I'm doing very well, better than these people Mega were just talking about. Let's go ahead, since we're going to be getting our inactives here relatively soon. I would love to know what the deal was with Christian Gonzalez. Why were they so dodgy about saying that he was limited, or why he was limited? And I know it's going to be coming out here in a minute, but do you expect that he's going to play today?
I'm with you. I mean, the indications are not really there to say one way or the other. He was on the field warming up prior to the game, going through work, so we'll find out soon. I think they're dodgy because there's an advantage to leaving uncertainty about who's going to play and who isn't. So is it management? I wouldn't be stunned if it was not. It seemed as if the secondary coach, cornerbacks coach, indicated that there was a level of management going on. But I think they like to milk it. I think every team likes to milk the injury uncertainty all the way to the end. I think I'm concerned about the Milton Williams addition too in the last 40 minutes or so to the injury report with an illness, because that should have been a big mismatch in the interior with Barmore and Williams going up against the interior of the Saints offensive line. So we'll wait with bated breath on the availability of the Patriots' two best defensive players.
Well, Tom, we have to wait no longer. It's actually out right now. Your inactives are Jalen Hawkins, Anthony Jennings, Eric Gregory, Caden Wallace, Keon White, and Tommy DeVito's the emergency third, which means Gonzalez and Williams will both be out there. To what extent, we don't know, but they'll both be in uniform.
Should be helpful. Should be helpful because, you know, this is an offense that, while last week it was interesting, they had turnovers on, I think, five drives consecutively, and, you know, they only managed 6 points off of those. So their offense has not been that great. This would have been a tough day to go against a team that has a little bit of momentum in New Orleans without two of your best players, thinking that, you know, they might be able to gain some momentum off of last week's game. So again, we'll see how much they play.
Tom, with how good the defense has been against the run, is today just a day where you try to make a young Spencer Rattler beat you? I know, I mean, to his credit, he's only turned the ball over once. He only has one interception this year for the Saints to his 6 touchdowns. So he hasn't done it a ton, but is the defensive goal today to get Spencer Rattler to try and beat you and then just try and win from there?
Yeah, I think you want to try and pick that as your poison. He is mobile. He does run pretty well and move the pocket and throw on the run. He's also been accurate, Chris. So, you know, I just don't think that there's necessarily layups for the Patriots yet. we say, okay, they'll master this guy. But it does bode well for them. There's a lot of speed on the New Orleans offense, and Alvin Kamara's still a pretty potent player for them, and Shaheed flies. So there are matchups there for them offensively that, you know, they can leak out. They have not been explosive down the field at all. So, you know, the underneath guys, matchups with linebackers could be something to watch. But, yeah, I would say, okay, let's put our, you know, chips on the number that seems like the most reasonable. And that would be, what do you got, Spencer?
Tommy, we all know about Ramondre Stevenson's fumbling issues. But aside from that, what do you think is the biggest hurdle to trying to soup up the performance of the run game? They're 27th or 28th based on what kind of stats you want to look at for their production. What's getting in the way for them?
Our great friend Phil Perry had a very nice, voluminous story on the Patriots run game. Talked to Morgan Moses, Garrett Bradbury, and McDaniels about the issues, and they sound like they're minor. As Bradbury was saying, look, we look at the tape, and it's not full-scale breakdowns. There's 3 or 4 yard runs that, if we blocked better, would have been 8 yard runs or even longer. So they believe it's close and getting there. It's just technique and finishing and communication. So I kind of feel the same way. I mean, they do have what I think is an offensive line that's playing pretty well, and they are opening holes. So the yards per gained before contact are actually around the middle of the league. So guys are getting to the second level, and maybe perhaps sometimes they drop the ball or they're not breaking tackles. And I think that Vrabel was alluding to that too this week, break tackles. But that's a really dicey proposition too. Do you want guys fighting for that extra yard? If it's a guy who protects the ball well, have at it. If it's not, and when you start to try and fight for more yardage, you start flopping your arm around like a tiny little penguin, that's not going to help anybody.
Cute, though.
Yeah, it's adorable.
Adorable. Tom, I've been listening to your commentary, and I'd like you to kind of just let the folks know, because I think you're on point with what the expectations are for this team moving forward based on not only last week's game, but the game before against Carolina. Just this is the playoffs something you expect this team? What is your expectations with the soft schedule they got moving forward for this Patriots team, considering how they've been playing?
Yeah, I do expect, if you kind of put everything in a vacuum, Ted, and say, look at the teams you're matching up with, look at the way your defense and defensive personnel are playing right now, your better players, look at the improvement of the offense, look at the improvement of the quarterback, and look at your opponents. You should be able to win games. And honestly, 10-3 is not an insane proposition given the teams that they're playing. Really, Tampa is the only one you look at and go, wow, that's a game that they probably would be on the short end of in a vacuum. But how does a young team deal with success? The quote that you guys used from Diggs was outstanding, I thought, earlier this week, where he said this could be a bigger challenge than the Buffalo game, not on the field, but on the mental side of dealing with success and following that up and continuing to build forward. And again, we had a long conversation last week about Drake May and his dark side and what exactly that meant. Is the dark side gone? Because the dark side is the dark side because you don't see it all the time. So one would hope that he can continue to build. You're not going to have these games where he is as absolutely responsible as last week. I mean, there's going to be plays where he's going to try and fit it in there and needs to try and fit it in there. It's just when will the mistakes come and how dire will they be? The nature of the mistakes earlier this season from Drake was so significant on first and 10 plays or in red zone plays that it was hard to overlook. If you're going to make a mistake, make it on 3rd and 3 from your own 47, throwing a 30-yard throw downfield.
Well, with that being said then, Tom, NFL.com had a list that came out that had Drake May in the top 10 of quarterbacks. Do you believe he's a top 10 quarterback right now? And if not, do you think he will be by the end of the year?
I think it would be unfair to not label him currently a top 10 quarterback. If you wipe the slate clean and said start a team, who do you want? I think he'd be pretty close to the top there too, as well, as I think about it, because of his youth. Will he continue to play as a top 10 quarterback as the season goes along? A lot of this is uncharted territory. All of this uncharted NFL territory for him. But I do believe that way ahead of the curve, as we said last week, he's ahead of the curve physically, mentally, and you can't confiscate that win last week and what it meant to go on the road against a not just a good team, an excellent team that had your full had its full focus on you, and to perform the way he did is you can't say, well, that didn't work out. Say that throw to Stephon Diggs, which we've discussed at length, Ted, had not extracted himself, or that linebacker, whoever was cruising over towards Diggs, had gotten in the way and made a pick there. Then we would have been back where we were and said, wow, what a great game. Too bad he had that, you know, eye-watering interception at the end because he had played so well. But now that he's done that, made that play, moved on, got a scoring drive out of that, won the football game, you can't confiscate. You've seen it. It's a precedent.
Tom, speaking of Drake May, now that you've seen multiple times teams have played a lot of zone defense against him and he's kind of cooked them a little bit, and Stephon Diggs is getting even better as the season goes on. He looks more healthy. He looks just ready to go. He looks more comfortable with Drake May. Do you expect teams to maybe kind of change their decision-making defensively against the New England Patriots offense, and we have to see more of the Drake May running that we saw in year one?
I think teams are probably a little confounded right now about what to do with May, because he is completing against pressure and blitzes.
Yep.
He's very high in the league-wide stats in terms of efficiency against the blitz, which one would not have expected to happen because he did have happy giddy feet at different times last year, and he did bolt the pocket. The other issue is if he's going to be effective downfield, teams are going to have to start playing less of the single high safety stuff, which they have been doing, because with that single high safety, you got one safety in the middle of the field, you've rotated the other guy in to help against the running game, which has been somewhat effective. Patriots have seen a ton of that. If May is effective against the blitz, and if May is effective against zone, and you have to play zone because of his run threat, teams are in a hard spot. So I don't know what the solution is, really, to me. Ted?
It's such a good point.
I volley it to you.
It's an excellent point. And it, you saw the Bills blitzed him twice in the first half, and they started blitzing him a ton in the second half, and he shredded him. He was 6-for-7 for 92 yards, and you literally saw them stop blitzing because it wasn't working. So it's to your point, Tom, I probably have the same answer you did in the sense that I don't know if they know how to attack him because he seemed to have broken the codes of a lot of what defenses are throwing at him.
Agreed. Go ahead.
Final question here. A lot of people are going to be excited because Efton Chisholm III is going to be active for the first time in the game today. Do you see him having any potential role in special teams? I think people jump to the Danny Amendola comparisons and say, well, he'll be a great returner, but he's got to elbow out guys like Marcus Jones and Trayvon Henderson, and now Antonio Gibson is out. Do you see an opportunity there for him?
Yeah, I would imagine the Gibson injury is what leads to him being back maybe on kick returns. It'll be interesting to see if that is where they use him. The Saints also have been a little bit more susceptible to underneath throws. So whether he might get some reps on offense, I don't think it would be a horrendous idea to get him, you know, 5 to 7 reps on the field, not targets necessarily, but get him out there, get him into an NFL game, let him see the speed, see if he goes to the spots that he's supposed to go. So, yeah, I would imagine that's Gibson-related, his elevation. But while he's there, can't hurt. So I'm interested to see what old EC3 does.
Mm-hmm.
That is the voice of Tom E. Kern, who you can check out on NBC Sports Boston pre-post game as well as in the middle of the game as well. They will have the halftime show there. You can check him out, him and Phil Perry, in the podcast as well, and you can hear him all week long right here on WEEI. Tommy, great stuff as always. We look forward to hearing you during and before and after the game.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Thank you.
Tommy Curran joining us here on Football Sunday. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll have Wiggy's Keys. Jermaine Wiggins with his keys to the game. That's next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mahomey, indeed. It's Football Sunday here. WEEI, Christian Arcand, Ted Johnson, Shime Time, Mego here as well. And it's quarter of 12, which means it's time to hear from Wiggy. Let's get to Wiggy's keys.
It's hard for me to be wrong. If you want to be a winner, this is what I would have did.
Wiggy's keys.
All right. Every Sunday, Wiggy gives us three keys when he remembers to, and he did this weekend. So let's hear key number one.
All right, it's your boy Wiggy. Here are my three keys for the Patriots for Sunday. Key number one, I want them to get Travion Henderson more involved in the running game, the passing game. I think he has explosive talent. I know he struggled a little bit when it comes to pass protection, but hey, guess what? You can take him out and you maybe put Ramondre in there for pass pro, but I want to see them get him more involved.
Okay, I'm glad Wiggy brought this up. This is a topic I was getting into a little bit this week. You see a lot of rookie running backs who are having big weeks. Cam Scataboo, I mean, everyone's talking about him. Judkins in Cleveland. You got Janty picking it up there with the Raiders, even though they're not winning games. These rookie running backs are performing. Meanwhile, Travion Henderson, who he used a high second-round pick on, is still kind of on the fringes of this offense. Is today the day that that changes?
I hope so, man. I think it kind of has to, right? With Gibson being down now for the rest of the season, like, this is his opportunity to step in, and I think all it's going to take is one explosive play, right? You see one big explosive play from Travion, and everybody's going to be like, all right, get this guy more touches. Everybody's going to start getting involved. But the issue is the Patriots' run game has just been kind of non-existent. They've been so below mediocre so far this season, it's hard. So we need to see, like, just one big play to kind of justify him being in there more often.
Yeah, and I think he still is a liability in pass protection.
I think that's fair.
And it's just something that is the transition to NFL from college. Everybody looks
there
at college.
You go. Thank you.
And says, hey, he was like the best at this in college.
You can do it in college, you can do it in the NFL.
No. We were just talking about the parity between these teams. Individually, when you got to pick up what they're showing you and the level of player, it's a rough transition for him right now. It's just a matter now when Antonio Gibson is out. Are you going to give more of those snaps to Terrell Jennings, who they elevated for the active roster this week? Or are you saying, we're going to see what Travion can pick up in real time?
I do, people just assume if he was good at blitz pickup in college, he'll be good at the blitz pickup in the NFL. The NFL blitzing is so much more advanced. The college teams, a lot of times, they play more vanilla because they run a lot of plays, and so you don't want to mess it up, and so you kind of play a lot of vanilla fronts, and so it's advanced stuff, man.
It's also more difficult to block a guy named TJ Watt than it is to block some random linebacker from Toledo.
Very true. Very true. And you know what? Maybe you have a couple plays that you had in that Miami game. If you remember the Miami game, I think the leading receivers were the running backs and the tight ends. You know, where you have him lined up and he free releases, where he doesn't have blitz pickup, and you keep maybe an extra guy in to block that he would have been blocking if you kept him in. Get him out into the routes fast. Get him out in space. His best runs are on the perimeter, and his best, I think, kind of jobs catching the ball will be out in the flat area. So get him on the edges, and I think you'll have more success.
Ted, to that point, like last week in that Buffalo game, you saw a ton of max protects where they'd bring out two running backs, but they just stay in and pass block along with the offensive line because the Bills were sending so many blitzes. I think this week is a good opportunity to kind of disguise that max protect and send him out on a free release and try and get him in open space.
Yep.
All right, let's get to key number two.
Number two is get after Spencer Rattler. Make him uncomfortable because he will throw you a ton of interceptions and give you opportunities to get your hands on footballs and create turnovers.
So I love my guy Wiggs, but Rattler has one interception.
One interception. That's one thing he's doing. One thing he's doing well. Yeah, he's not throwing interceptions.
He's due to throw a bunch of them. The Patriots defensive front, they didn't get to Allen a lot. But they did keep him uncomfortable. He was throwing the ball when he didn't want to. They were chasing him all over the place. And I thought, in general, even though they didn't get a lot of sacks, they did have some QB. I think they had four or five QB hits. They rushed him into the throwing when he didn't want to yet. And I thought, all in all, did a very sort of under the radar, very good job on him.
Yeah, I think it's almost like maybe Wiggy is trying to reflect something back onto the Patriots, which is, I really do think, yeah, this is a defense that they're seeing in the Saints where they don't want to be giving the ball up, because then they're going to be finding themselves in the same position that they found themselves against the Steelers.
The challenge is going to be the ball comes out fast. He's only been sacked 9 times, right? And he doesn't have pass per play is 5.6 yards. So it's a dink and dunk kind of approach. Ball comes out fast, so it's harder to get to him. So you're going to have to, beat him on their first move if you're going to get sacks. But you don't have to sack a quarterback to disrupt him. As you just mentioned with Josh Allen, just pressuring him getting a hand in his face can be all that you need to do.
All right, it's key number 3.
And number 3 is Josh McDaniels continue to call a great game plan for Drake May. Allow him to use his legs. Allow him to make plays from inside the pocket, outside the pocket. Do some great things with him. Get the ball into Steph Diggs' hands. But continue to come up with these great game plans that allows Drake May to excel. Those are my keys.
Sean, when's we going to realize it's not about Josh McDaniels?
That Bills game was not about Josh McDaniels. I don't know what he's doing.
But to his point, I do think there's some good positive impact that Josh is having.
Definitely.
Regardless of what, Shime thinks. But I do like the play calling. Gosh, you referenced it earlier, Shime, about the first game was terrible play calling.
So bad.
And it's gotten better. A lot Much more better. Play action passes. They had 41% of the plays last week on offense were play action. Give me more play action. Give me under center. Give me shotgun. Give me boots to the right. Give me boots to the left.
Keep those motions.
Keep those moving pockets going, and I think you'll get the best out of Drake May.
Hopefully so. We'll see what happens, and we'll see what happens if they give extra attention to someone like Steph Diggs, what May in the offense and Josh McDaniels in particular does to counter something like that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.